Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. It's Caitlin.
And Jamie.
And you are about to hear our episode that we recorded live
in early November,
about The Fifth Element, a movie directed by
Luc Besson. A popular request. We've been wanting to do this movie forever. We were thrilled that Daniel Radford could be there with us. We just wanted to say really quick at the top that we were not aware of the many allegations against the director of this movie when we recorded that episode. We're now aware of them. Mm-hmm. So
part of it is that a lot of the story broke after we
shortly
recorded.
After, and some did before. Mm-hmm. But the three of us were not aware of any of this at the time this episode was recorded. So if you're looking for analysis on that end, unfortunately, we didn't know. But if you do a little research, he's basically the Harvey Weinstein of France.
Yes, has been accused of a lot of sexual misconduct, assault.
And I mean, if we have any French listeners, we would love to hear your take on it. But it seems like the situation's being handled very differently, and he is continuing to work mm-hmm. without a problem.
Boo.
So just a little context up top. Sorry to start on a downer, but yeah. Danielle's amazing. The episode is a blast.
Fun.
And we hope you enjoy it.
Yeah.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Oh, welcome to the Bechdel cast. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for coming.
So the movie we're covering today is The Fifth Element. By round of applause, who has seen it? Great.
Oh, okay.
And is there anyone who hasn't?
I hadn't, so don't be shy.
Okay.
Yeah.
My sole sibling. Yeah, we're talking about The Fifth Element today. I am, man, what a ride. Did you know the future is not female? The future is French. So we've got a French-ass patriarchy to look forward to, according to this movie.
Yeah, so we use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point to initiate a larger conversation about the representation and portrayal of women in movies. And what is the Bechdel test?
Well, the Bechdel test is a metric created originally by cartoonist Alison Bechdel that requires a piece of media include two female-identifying characters with names for our purposes who speak about something other than a man to each other for more than two lines of dialogue. You think it'd be easy.
You would think.
And yet, this movie doesn't pass.
Whoops. Oh, we blew it at the top of the show.
I am so tired of people being like, the show is like, does it pass the Bechdel test? Like, obviously, no, it doesn't ever. If you're listening for 70 minutes to be like, oh, does it pass? Like, grow up. Like, that's, you know, it's a what I'm trying to say is I'm sorry, I've had half a Mike's heart and I'm fucked up. But, is that it is a jumping off point for discussion. It is not by any means. There are some movies we've done that pass the Bechdel test by two female identifying characters telling each other to kill themselves. So, you know, it is not a metric of being a feminist icon by any means.
No. Yeah. And tonight, to join us in our discussion, we've got a wonderful guest.
She's the best.
You know her from Screen Junkies and Tights and Fights. It's Danielle Radford.
Yay. Hi.
Welcome.
I did it. Also, I should have brought my purse because, like, I don't sit like a lady. And that's never more evident when I don't just have my purse here to save me from showing.
Well, let's redefine how sitting like a lady.
Okay, I
looks.
Don't sit like a person who doesn't care if you see her vagina.
Great. I love that phrase.
So, well, maybe not like a lady, but just like a human who doesn't want to be arrested.
Okay.
I only wear skirts and I don't cross my legs. Sup, guys?
An icon in your own right.
I am the Jaden Smith of guests of this podcast.
Okay, so we're talking about The Fifth Element. Danielle, what is your history, your relationship with the movie?
So this is one of my favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
I will preface this by saying I love things that are bad. I do not think this movie is bad. I think this movie is great, and I think that it doesn't pass my bad test, but it does come really goddamn close. Just like
what is that?
Oh, so I have a really specific test for what makes a good bad movie. First of all, obviously it has to be bad. That's the first thing.
Of course.
Obviously. Secondly, it has to be sincere. It can't be like Snakes on the Plane where they're like, oh, we're going to make a bad movie. It's like, no, the people making it, even if it's intentionally campy, the people making it have to care about what they are doing. There's a reason why Black Dynamite, while it is obviously meant to be this like pastiche, is also still a really fun bad movie, mm-hmm, and not just like a cynical, we tried to make a bad movie. And third, you gotta have spectacle. There has to be spectacle of some kind. Whether it's like, you know, in the case of Showgirls, it's all of the dancing, or whether it's a sci-fi movie and there is good or bad CGI or makeup or characters, or whether you just have Tommy Wiseau, which is spectacle on his own.
What's your favorite bad movie?
Oh, gosh. The Last Dragon.
Ooh, I've never seen that one.
Oh, it's so good.
Is it good?
It's and apparently so bad.
Have you? Yeah. So in the 80s, Berry Gordy decided that black folks really like karate. So he decided to make a movie which is not a musical, wink, wink, but is filled with the music of Motown in the 80s, which, as most of you know, no one was listening to. And there were some, but not a whole bunch. And yeah, it starred a guy named Ty Mock, one name, and it also starred a Prince protege, an ex-Prince protege named Vanity.
Oh my God. I want to watch this movie really bad.
Come to our next live show. We'll be covering Last Dragon.
What's your favorite bad movie, really quick?
I have exquisite taste, so I don't like any bad movies. Probably like Spice World or something.
Solid.
Oh, that's not a bad movie. Alan Cumming's in it. That doesn't count.
Right.
I have a tie between I, Frankenstein and Jobs, the one with Ashton Kutcher.
Ooh. And Ashton Kutcher pretending like he's a character actor is spectacle.
It is. He was like, here's my nomination. And then it said,
Wink, hey guys, it's me. It's Ashton Kutcher.
He's like, I'm a little too handsome, you know? Like, that's kind of his thing.
I'm in a turtleneck.
That is kind of like my favorite kind of bad biopic, is when you feel like the lead actor, even though they're technically not, are constantly looking like, you know, this isn't me, right? It's just kind of funny. I'm Ashton Kutcher.
I'm Ashton Kutcher. Y'all know I fucked, right?
Yeah. I don't even know how to turn a computer on. It's like, oh, cool.
Okay,
The Fifth Element.
Yeah. sorry to derail this conversation, but so The Fifth Element, you think it's a good bad movie.
Yes.
And it's one of your favorites.
It's one of my favorites. It is also one of my Oma's favorites, which anytime my Oma loves a movie, I know it's bad. So it's
okay.
Great.
Awesome. Jamie, what's your history?
Well, as I've been critiqued and praised for, I saw it this morning. I had no history with this movie. I wasn't aware it was a movie that was famous so much that I pushed back as like, no one's seen that movie. And I was informed that nearly everyone but me had seen that movie and that I am a dumbass. So I saw it today.
Great.
But I enjoyed it.
That's yes. Surprising because it's not your genre.
No, I'm not normally a sci-fi person. But, I mean, the outfits, the wigs, you feel like at any moment in this movie, you're like, someone could break into song. Given the aesthetic of the movie and the vibe the actors are putting out, there could be a musical number, but there just simply isn't.
Yeah.
It was a choice.
Yes. Also, one of my favorites, I saw it for the first time, I think, in college. I don't know if you know this, but I did go to film school twice. I do have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University. I would never bring it up, but I do. Oh, wow. No one likes the bits. Thanks. Okay. Thank you.
A smattering.
Okay. But yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. Upon the rewatch, though, it felt a little tedious. It's long. I don't remember it being over two hours long.
2.5 hours long.
Yeah. No, it's like 2 hours and 6 minutes.
No, it's 2.5 hours long.
No. Really?
I watched it on dailymotion.com, Galen. It's 2.5 hours long.
Dailymotion.com for all your pirated video needs.
They're not sponsoring this. I simply didn't want to pay. It's too old. If a movie came out before 2005, I won't pay to watch it.
It should just be free at that point.
It should. I'm just like, you know what? You had your chance to get my money.
Why are we still paying for Chinatown?
I paid for Miss Congeniality recently, and I was furious. Dailymotion.com. So there's no excuse.
Well, they were wrong because you apparently watched like an extended cut because it's.
Oh yeah,
because
if you watch it on Dailymotion, they have to slow it down so it tricks the algorithm.
Oh,
so you're probably watching.
I watched was 2 hours and 36 minutes long.
Yeah, so you're watching the version where Rudy Rod is talking like a normal person. Oh no! Oh no!
It's 20 extra minutes right there. Well. Well, you know what? Because they're not our sponsor, fuck dailymotion.com. Upload better pirated files.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's long, and it was a little tedious. There's lots to talk about, and I'm excited to do that. Yeah. So without much further ado, I'll do that recap that we're all so fond of. Oh, wow.
Hi. Oh, wow.
All right, we open. It's 1914 in Egypt. What is this? The Mummy starring Brandon Fraser?
Literally.
Yeah. Right. There are a lot of white guy archaeologists.
I love how, like, in any movie that opens, like, around World War I, everyone's like, colonialism was awesome, right?
You're just like, look at all this cool stuff we found that no one's seen before.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we stole it, but it was for the greater good. Like, it was just horrible.
And in this movie, they're like looking at some hieroglyphics and they tell of this evil force that's going to show up soon, but there's a weapon against it, the four elements plus a fifth element.
I spent a lot of this movie confused because I forgot that we were talking about elements a la Avatar The Last Airbender and not senses. Uh-huh. Where I was like, oh, like the movie I turned it on, I was like, oh, taste probably. Just a wild guess. But they're talking about elements, and I don't know how many.
For example, earth, fire, wind, and water.
And taste. So there's actually six, and they were wrong.
Okay, so those four elements plus taste plus a fifth element will combine to make a weapon that will fight against this impending evil. And then all these aliens show up, and they're like, we're taking these stones that represent each one of the elements.
And we say aliens, but they're Muppets.
They're something. They're robots? Robot aliens?
They look like sarcophagi that move.
Ooh, yeah. Kind of, yeah.
And they're like, hey, priest that's here, make sure you, like, pass down this information, because, like, the evil stuff is going to come in 300 years.
And the aliens give so much exposition. They're like, remember, 300 years, only priests could pass down. And he's like, I will do that. And,
yeah.
But it's supposed to be scary also.
And only the whitest of priests.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we got to, believe it or not, 300 years later, 2214.
Okay, so I read on the Wikipedia, okay, my two favorite websites, dailymotion.com, wikipedia.com, that it's 2263, like it's over years in the future.
So it's not an exact science, I guess.
But there's, so in the future...
Well, so maybe evil had been gathering, and it took it 3 years to get to the point where it was scaring Zeus, Tiny, the guy who played the president.
Right. Yes, yes. So it's like far in the future, there's still patriarchy, but it's French now, and men wear sexy tank tops. That's the more the vibe of this patriarchy.
And so this like ominous like planet thing shows up. The like president and the military try to destroy it, but every time they do that, it just gets like more evil. So they're like, oh no.
And also this was during a period where having a black president seemed very sci-fi.
Right. What was the other, was it Deep Impact?
Deep Impact, yeah. Another one where it was like, we only get a black president when the world's about to, oh, shit. Mm-hmm.
So then Father Cornelius shows up and he's all like, hey, this is the evil thing.
The priest, it's not the same actor, but it may as well be the same actor who's like, hey, that thing.
Right, except now it's Bilbo Baggins.
Ian Holm.
Yeah. Okay, so then we meet Corbin Dallas. That's Bruce Willis's character.
Not to be confused with Corbin Blue for those in the audience who are like, wait a second.
Wait, what's that from?
He's...
Is this like a DCOM Nickelodeon?
Yes, it is a DCOM thing. Their Corbin Blue was in the High School Musical franchise to start, and then he went on to have a successful career. He's great. He's in Beetlejuice the Musical in Washington, D.C. right now. So
wow.
That is something that I found out on purpose. I like to keep up with him.
Okay, so Corbin Dallas, he is a cab driver in New York City. Ever heard of it? And
but it's future, so air cars.
Yeah. He's ex-military because Bruce Willis can't play someone who's not either a cop or in the military. He's a tough guy, but he's got a cat, too. Now would be a good time to bring up the fact that cats do have eight nipples. And that's Cat Facts with Caitlin. Okay. And his whole thing is he's looking for the perfect woman.
The word perfect is invoked so many times in reference to, like, you know, 5'9", blue eyes, good skin. Yeah. Perfect. And you're like, if so many times the word perfect is used in reference to someone who is being exploited by the government, it's bad.
I'm a weapon.
There, yeah. It's bad.
Okay, so then the Mondo Shuin, those are the good aliens from the beginning of the movie. The Muppets.
Literally, every alien in every universe sounds like someone who is pretending like they know how to speak Japanese, but it's fine.
Fair.
Yeah. So they show up. They're like, we're here to help. We've got those stones. But then...
The stones. The stones bother me. It is like, what if we had 5 Chekhov's guns? Like, the whole plot use of the stones is like at some point in the middle of the movie, all of a sudden it's all about the stones. And every main character, every other line is to be like, the stones, where are the stones?
Okay, so they're like, we're here to help, but their ship crashes because some bad aliens show up and shoot it down. But there's a lone survivor, a.k.a. it's like...
She's a hand.
Cells. Yeah, it's a hand, which is comprised of like very highly advanced genetic material. So some engineers show up.
Some perverts in New York.
Yeah.
Bring her back to life.
No women in STEM in that scene.
Just perverts in STEM. Bring her back to life. And it turns out she's a sexy lady, parentheses, a nude.
Yes. And they're like, oh, God, she's perfect. And then
the word perfect is invoked no less than 4 times in that scene.
Yes.
And then they're like, put bandages on her. And then the bandages form a sexy leotard? That's not how bandages work.
No, but bandages in the future not only are not used to protect against injury that doesn't exist, they also just magically form around your body and snap off and never come back.
Yes. Around your little butt. And I was like, oh, these are bandages that like follow the Instagram policies. How convenient. Incredible.
They're like bondages. Like, she was
like
strapped
that.
To the bed. Mm-hmm. And then when she got up, it was like, ugh, I guess you were sexier and more perfect when you were strapped to this bed. And then they become like her.
And then they're like, I guess we better become a leotard that will become, you know, the choice of, like, the girl who's unlike the other girls at all college Halloween parties until Kingdom fucking come.
So then she escapes from this lab and she ends up in the back seat of our friend Corbin Dallas's cab.
Not Corbin Blue.
Not Corbin Blue.
Again, can't say it enough. He was a baby.
So because she's so perfect and because he thinks she's hot, he helps her escape from the cops and he takes her to Father Cornelius. And he's like, oh, shit, this is the fifth element. She's perfect.
It's taste.
We can tell because she's white.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes. And we learn her name is Lilu. And then the priest is like, get out of here, Bruce Willis. And then
Bruce Willis is like, but my tank top. And the priest is like, I respect her tank top. It's very good, but leave. And
it has like a cutout of the back.
There's two cutouts of the back.
Yeah.
It's really a cute. I was telling Danielle, I think it's like a tank top that I would wear today.
It feels like it was meant to show off how hot 90s Bruce Willis still was, you know, back when he cared about acting.
Because
not even that his like body is hot, it's just like, you're still doing this because you like it. And but it is one of those things where it's like, I feel like that is the outfit they would give to a woman now to be like, see, we're relevant.
Yeah,
like,
they're
she
like
doesn't
the
just
Zara.
Have to wear two Band-aids, like she could definitely wear this tank top outfit and go after Aperture.
Yeah, there are a lot of Zara inspo from these outfits. This is like a fun period for Bruce Willis where he's like famous enough that he's like, you know, I'm just going to try. So I'm going to play the same character without doubt every single time. Mm. However, maybe I'll wear a tank top. And we're like, you know what? Good for you.
Yeah.
You
know, maybe I'll be Bruce Willis in space this time. No one's ready for that.
Right. Like, okay, we've mastered Bruce Willis on Earth. Where do we go? Tank top Bruce Willis in space?
You play a harmonica in space. Does it make a sound?
We've got to ask him.
Okay, so then they're like, where are the stones that are supposed to protect us? And Lilu is like, oh, we gave them to this diva who sings opera. Let's go to that place, which is called Flotsam Paradise. But then also there's this bad guy, Zorg, played by Gary Oldman, Boo.
Boo.
Who is also trying to get the stones.
Because the new his wife.
I think if we're talking about Gary Oldman getting the stones, we have to say the stones.
The stones.
Oh, right. Yeah, that is how he sounds.
We have to get the stones.
We're going to get the stones. And then also light that man on fire.
Yeah, for those who aren't in the know, he beat his wife and he sucks.
Yes.
Anyway.
To those late to the Gary Oldman is canceled train, he's been canceled.
Yes. So then because Corbin Dallas is like, good thing I'm ex-military, this general comes around. He's like, hey, we need you to go to Flotsam Paradise to protect the diva. Is that what the mission is? I don't know.
Because plot, basically.
Right. So he's like, okay, I'll go there. And then so everyone's trying to get to Flotsam Paradise now. So the priest is there. Lilu's there. Corbin Dallas is there. The bad guys are there. Turns out those stones that we've all been looking for. They are inside of the big, tall, blue woman.
Because that's what women are for. Carrying important things inside of us. Yay. And dying immediately.
And then Bruce Willis is smart enough to be like, let me punch this dead woman, therefore launching us into the third act of the movie. And we're like, yay! So he punches a dead woman in her stomach, puncturing her flesh, and wins.
Mm-hmm. We did it.
Yay!
So now the good guys have the stones, and the bad guys are trying to get them. So there's a fight, and then they go to Egypt, and that big like evil ball is like looming towards Earth. So they go to Egypt, and they're like,
"We gotta get those stones."
And then they go to this like tomb that we saw in the beginning of the movie, and they're like, "Oh, how do we do this?" And then they figured out that like you have to blow on the stones and set them on fire. You know, the corresponding elements, and then it saves the day.
Fuck? The stones are so stupid.
It's like, yeah, it's like four MacGuffins.
Another draft of the script, we could cut the stones. I feel like
the stones are a Scentsy candle.
Ooh, you know? Interesting.
Like, I don't know if your college or high school friends have hit you up yet to try to sell you on multi-level marketing schemes where it's like, well, look. Our candles don't need fire. Yeah. Some of them do, but some of them you can put on a heating element. And then some of them you can blow on. And then some of them you need a girl to remember what love is. I feel like that's...
Caitlin!
Jamie!
Caitlin, I have to ask consent for something.
Please.
Can we take a break?
I grant you permission and consent to take a break.
A very progressive transition to advertisement.
Wow.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The whole thing with this movie is it's like, okay, so we've got a woman as Christ figure. The twist is she doesn't get to do fucking anything. Mm-hmm. And she needs hetero white love to create taste.
Oh, the fifth element. Yes,
or
yes,
something.
Yes.
That's, I'm not totally sure.
No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. But it ends with like they kiss, a beam of light for their boring love, right? Explodes out from them. And then it cuts forward to like the president being like, cool, good that happened. And then he calls Bruce Willis's mom, who's like a very stereotypically like naggy mom. And she's like, "Mare, the president sucks." And then the president's like, "What the heck?" And then we cut to Bruce Willis fucking. And then the movie's over.
Yeah.
You're like, we can't end the movie with... I feel like that's like a contractual thing for Bruce Willis. He's like, "I have to be fucking on screen or I won't do it. I don't care how out of plot it seems."
I feel like he doesn't fuck that much in movies.
Really?
Yeah.
He fucks...
I feel like it's more of like the threat that he will fuck. It's like we know that the intent is that he's so sexy that he will be fucked.
He and Alan Rickman don't fuck in that movie. Maybe I'm watching the wrong movie.
If you're watching him on dailymotion.com, who knows what you're saying?
That'd be really funny if I was just watching the porn version of the movie. I'm being like, yeah, uh-huh. Really not fair to women.
But yeah, so we do see him fuck in this movie, and
that was the ending. Really threw me. I did not see the president naggy mom fucking three punch in a row.
Well, they're fucking in the like rejuvenation chamber or whatever it is they call it. Like they're in the chamber where she was born. That's fucking weird.
Oh yeah, it's like
they're
like,
fucking in her mom.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's where she became a person. And it's great because she still isn't quite one yet. So you can just take her back there and just bang her inside.
That's a great transition into one of the main talking points for this movie.
And part of the reason that we had it like on our radar of stuff we wanted to cover in the first place.
Yes. And that, of course, is the Born Sexy Yesterday trope. If you're not familiar, this is a trope that was, the name was coined by Jonathan McIntosh on his one of his pop culture detective video essays, but it basically describes a trope that's like very common in sci-fi especially, and it's characterized by an adult woman being physically mature and sexual, but she has the brain and naivete of a baby.
Yay!
Hurrah!
And part of the funny thing about this trope is it is rooted in, per that video and the read of most people, I hope, is it's very much rooted in male insecurity that is like they can't hack it with women who have lived any manner of life. And
right.
So they're like, what if it's a body I want to fuck, but someone who doesn't know anything and has never met anyone? I would look great to someone who doesn't know anyone.
And what if my dick was the first dick she saw?
Exactly. Like,
right.
What if I had a, like, it is very sinister and, like, deeply rooted in the way it is. But describing it is very silly. There's, like, a lot of examples, and some of them are given by McIntosh, but there are examples of reverses of this trope. But the way it's treated by the movie is very silly. Like Big is a great example of like a baby brain in a grown man's body. But the man in that movie is not sexualized in a deep way. Most of the stuff he's doing is played for laughs and played for like, isn't this ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. And so it is, as much as you get the argument that it's played for men and women in movies, the way it's treated by the camera and by the plot is always very different.
Mm-hmm. And it's certainly, I would say, more common for the Born Sexy Yesterday character to be a woman in most cases.
Yeah, I mean, it's like not like the men, they're like, we've got to see his dick. Like there's... But like in this first shot of Lulu, we see her completely nude, a very like gratuitous nude shot of her.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you were saying, it's problematic on a number of levels. One, because this character usually ends up being the love interest of the male hero, because it's like the first man she ever meets. She's like, well, I don't know anyone else, so you're the one.
That's why we all have daddy issues.
And it's like this unequal power dynamic.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's like based on male insecurities and like the fear of being inadequate, both like intellectually and sexually. So yeah.
And also, I think, you know, it's where well actually comes from. It's like a way to manifest mansplaining.
Totally.
Oh, I get to explain everything to her.
Yeah.
And then she gonna fuck.
Right. Because usually in these stories ends up like teaching her everything about the world and including sex. So yeah, it basically allows them to like fulfill this fantasy where it's like, I'm the awesomest guy you've ever seen and here's everything I know.
Yeah, it's like this creepy flattening of sexy professor.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Where it's like tricky because it's like, we're not even saying that characters shouldn't be able to learn from each other regardless of gender, but it's so unequal that it's like, oh, this person doesn't know how to eat.
Yeah. Like she didn't...
Don't date them.
You don't know what a spoon is, mm-hmm. you know? Or like, you don't know how flatware works.
Or like, Lilu doesn't know how showers work. And that is something that he's like, oh my God, your nipples. Like, you're just like, no, that's not what is the focus. That doesn't make sense. It's a very frustrating trope, and it is so extremely common. I mean, it comes up in movies even now. Like, it was coming up in Tron, and then what the fuck is the movie where Oscar Isaac's a hot scientist?
Oh, Ex Machina.
Ex Machina is another one.
It can be argued it comes up in Wonder Woman quite a bit.
Yeah, it does. We talked about that. It absolutely does. Yeah. And it's frustrating because another thing about that trope to sort of neutralize it a little bit is that very often the woman has like a skill or two that is impressive to the man, which is usually that she can sort of fight.
She can't be creepy. She kicks high.
You're like, well, a baby can't do that. So I can have sex with her. Like, you're just like,
when's the last time you saw a baby shoot a gun?
So I think it's like fair that we are married. Like, no. It is a very complex trope. Like, like the guys are trying to get you at every corner of like, well, babies don't shoot guns, and I could fuck a baby if it was a lady.
Look, she needs help bathing, but like, she could beat me up, so it's fine.
She remember that scene? Yeah, we're dating.
Well, that leads me to another thing I wanted to talk about. So her whole thing is that she's the supreme being. She's the fifth element, like the thing that's needed to like save the world from this like catastrophic event. And she has the ability to like absorb all the information in the world in a matter of seconds.
She learns very, very quickly, which sounds cool, but ultimately doesn't serve the plot very much.
No.
Well, it serves the fucking Bruce Willis parts of the plot.
Well, but you would think if she knew the history of the world, she would know not to trust Bruce Willis.
Like, yeah, it conveniently misses out on patriarchy while it goes through all of the wars.
She finds out about patriarchy at literally the last second. She's like, oh no, what is this? But then she learns about war and patriarchy in the third act, and then you see her like, she's like, and she's crying and she's gonna win.
Even though she's literally been kicking people in the face because they were trying to get to another woman.
Yeah, she's been engaging in war. And she's like, what's war?
And she's like, oh no, it's bad. And then she learns about war and patriarchy, but her solution to that is Bruce Willis, fuck me? Like, that's not the solution to that.
Kiss me on the stone.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Oh, now you're all thinking of her with his head.
Bottom line, the ultimate plot hole.
She has this like uncanny ability to like learn everything and be the smartest person ever, really. But the only thing that he appreciates her for is how she looks. And this is a common thing that happens by a number of characters where they're like, they talk about her as if she's an object. They call her a possession. They call her, like, they keep talking about how perfect she is.
She's spoken about as if she's an item for.
Right.
The whole movie. Like, and that doesn't change.
And even when she does learn, it's that thing of like, well, she learns, but she doesn't have emotional intelligence.
Right.
So she has book learning, and she gets things, but she doesn't, like, she still isn't capable.
She's a computer, basically. She's a computer, but that you can fuck her.
Yeah, that Corbin Dallas is like, ooh, yeah, like 5'9", and that hot stuff.
You know, the further we get from weird science, the more that I'm like, that chick was right. Punch those nerds in the face, or however that movie
was. Oh, right, yeah.
Kill them all.
Oh, boy, that movie. Ooh.
God. The Bruce Willis tank top, I would like to just bring up again.
good.
Yeah, I just think it's dumb that she has the ability to learn like an infinite amount of knowledge, but he is only impressed by how attractive she is.
Well, the thing that they're trying to do, I mean, this movie is all over the place, and I think part of the reason it is I did some research on the origin of where this movie came from, and it's partially built from a treatment or a short story the director wrote when he was a teenager. And so if you saw this movie and you're like, seems like a horny French boy's fantasy, you're exactly right. Like, what if a horny French boy had millions of dollars? This movie answers that question.
Well, and Besson has always been like, you know, he was a big, and you got to see a lot of what he based that on in Valerian, which no one watched.
I heard it was really bad.
I weirdly saw that movie. Sorry.
Yeah? Did you like it?
No.
Yeah, because it's another one where it's like this time, instead of plucking a woman out of time and making her the perfect woman, they pluck a woman out of time, and she's still in this series, which is based on this old French like newspaper serial. It's like their version of Valiant or whatever, which is another thing that none of us here watched or read in the cartoon section. It was the one that you skipped. And or you put dicks on. And like me. And so in that series, the dude from the future, like they are also time travelers, he goes back and he grabs this peasant woman from, I want to say, the 17th or 18th century. Mm. And so again, it's that thing of like, oh, you're so pretty and so, you know, you're of these values, but I still have to teach you about this modern world.
Right.
Yeah. And that's where like so much of what the Fifth Element became was based on this.
And I think you made a great point about Wonder Woman too, of like, I'm thinking back to our Wonder Woman episode where that was something we didn't pick up on at the time, of like even a year ago, of like, yeah, the male lead in that movie, one of the Chris's, I don't fucking know which,
Pine,
had to teach
her. The one who just showed off his penis in that movie on Netflix.
Is that the one? I honestly, I have Chris blindness. I can't tell any of them apart. I don't know. There's too many. But it's a frustrating trope. And it was like built from his, like something he'd wanted to do since he was a teenager. It seems like very little edits were made from his little horny story. So that's just a fact.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to bring up, I mean, so she is one of very few female characters in the movie. She's the only one that is like a primary character. Yeah. There are quite a few women with speaking roles in the movie, but they're mostly in like tertiary roles, and they're usually in like service roles.
I was gonna say, there's
like
a lot of secretaries,
flight attendants. Yeah.
Someone who gets super, super banged by a
Whew, there's a lot to unpack there. I think it's interesting that it's weird because I feel like what frustrated me about this movie, even though I ultimately did like it, is that this movie contradicts itself in so many ways, where it's trying to have it so many ways, where it's like with Lilu, you're given basically a female Christ-like figure, but she doesn't get to do any of the cool stuff that comes with being a Christ-like figure. Like, you've got, if you were talking movie Christ-like figures, you know, you've got your fucking Luke Skywalkers, you got your Harry Potters, you got your Jesus Christ. You got like, and the thing about being a Christ figure is at some point you get to not be a baby and do something, and she doesn't get to do that.
Yeah, it comes with a leadership role.
Right.
At a certain point, you know, you look at a Buffy, and the thing about, if you look at a Buffy, mm-hmm. she kicks a lot of ass and she's a young girl, but part of being the Slayer, and then obviously there's problems with that series too, but part of being the Slayer is it comes with a natural leadership ability.
Yeah.
Typically, when a dude, even if he discovers 2 days ago that he can maybe use the Force, kind of if he squints, he suddenly becomes someone very important to the Rebellion.
Yeah, right.
And not just because, you know, he can kind of maybe do a thing, but because they respect him for his brain and for his mind, and he suddenly becomes a leader of people. And with the born sexy babies,
they never
know,
get to get past the baby phase.
Yeah,
like, she's even a very Wonder precocious Woman, child.
Yeah, like even Wonder Woman, she does become kind of a leader, but even then, mostly when it's her and the Pine separated, and
Pine,
he's like, "Oh, I've seen what she's doing, and so I'll go ahead and let her do it." But like, as far as being a tactician or a military leader or someone who has the respect of folks, Lilu never gets that, and she could murder all of them.
Right. She could, and then she like passes.
And you should respect more. You should respect an angry baby even more.
And she kind of conveniently tends to fall limp or pass out
when it would be convenient for Bruce Willis's character to suddenly be useful.
Yeah, it's like Jean Grey in the X-Men cartoon.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So there is a sequence when they're on the Flotsam Jetsam place, and then they're like...
Flotsam and Jetsam. Yeah,
yeah. I was like, what is that from? Okay. The Paradise Hotel, which is basically Titanic, I think we can all agree.
Yes. They do evacuate, and it does not work out.
No. But there's a sequence where Lulu is like single-handedly fighting a bunch of the bad aliens. And then we're like, okay, great. I guess she can fight because she looked up. It's basically that same sequence from The Matrix when she's like, I know Kung Fu. And then she even does this motion with her hand. But this movie came before The Matrix. It's probably a reference to something else anyway. So she's like fighting off all these bad guys. And then for no reason, she like starts to die? Like, she becomes completely damseled and, like,
it's
is just
so
limp and can't do anything for the whole third act.
The only thing that will revive her is Bruce Willis' kisses.
Yeah, yes. Just true love's kiss. At right. The end of the day, it's true love's fucking kiss. Like, that's all that does it.
Hey, speaking of kisses, let's talk about the surprise kiss scene that happens.
Yeah, I guess we have to.
Okay, so this one, here's how it goes. Lulu is sleeping.
Repeat, unconscious, not conscious, cannot tell what's going on. Mm-mm.
Bruce Willis tries to kiss her.
In the tank top of all tops.
And then she holds a gun to his head. And he's like, you're right, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have tried to kiss you. But he's only saying that because there's a gun
he's
to his
to
head.
Save his life.
And then she says something in her like divine language. And then his defense is, he said to wake you gently. And... I thought you would remember me from the cab as if, you know...
Have you ever wanted someone you met in a cab to kiss you while you're sleeping?
That's like if someone was like, oh, I'm sorry I molested you, but remember me from the Uber pool? You're like, no, and get away from me.
Man, that whole kissing someone while they're sleeping thing was so prevalent that when I was a kid, I would think it was cute to run up on my parents and kiss them on the cheek while they were sleeping. And it took me 3 times to realize that's fucking terrifying, and it ends with adults screaming.
Yeah.
And that rings true till today.
Yes.
That's so funny.
So then he condescends to her and he's like, call me when you can speak English, JK, but not really.
Dick, she speaks like 80 languages. Right, she didn't get to English.
And then later he's like, oh, what was that thing that she said? And then the priest translates it to never without my permission. So in this case of the surprise kiss in this movie, at least consent is acknowledged, and she does hold a gun to his head for trying to surprise kiss him. But he is not punished at all, really, because then he ends up getting to kiss her later for reasons that don't make sense. But, you know, when you have a man and a woman in a story together, they better kiss on each other at the end. So
what else are they doing? There's just a world to save and a universe and some stones.
Stones.
Is he like,
that makes it even more frustrating for me, though, when it's like the movie demonstrates, yeah, we know what consent is. We know how it works. We just don't care.
Right.
Like, that's like even more frustrating when, I mean, it's frustrating and unacceptable across the board. But you've got a somewhat different situation when you've got, for instance, Brendan Fraser, My King, The Mummy, surprise kissing. In The Mummy, and it's never commented on. And the way that movie positions it is that they don't know what they're doing. Like, they're stupid.
Well, in that movie, he surprise kisses Rachel Weisz, and then she's like, ooh.
And then she falls
in love.
And you're like, oh, this movie's for idiots. Okay, got it. But this movie's like, no, not without my permission. And then you're like, oh, cool, we're on the right track. And they're like, just kidding, we're not. We're going to keep getting this woman naked and the movie won't, and like the world will end unless she gets like kissed by this guy who molested her at the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And I wanted to talk more about that. The way that just the wardrobe of this movie, the way women are dressed, it's with Lulu especially, we already talked about the straps that somehow magically become like a bathing
suit. And it doesn't get better as the movie goes on. It's like turns into a different leotard, but this one sort of has sleeves.
Yeah, and it's matching though Bruce's orange tank top, so they match.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, we see her nipples, I think, no less than 3 times in the movie. She's always, because she doesn't understand social norms, so that gives her permission to just be like, oh, naked.
Yeah, and like even the blue singing lady is wearing a dress that looks like she's naked.
Right.
Like she's wearing a flesh colored for her dress.
But don't worry, that scene ends with her dying and getting punched in the stomach. Where
so it's
the
fine.
Stones have been hidden.
We're not
the
meant
whole
to sexualize
time.
Her. She's meant to be our mom.
It's like she's sexy until she's dead, and then she's mommy.
You're like, what is this fucking movie?
But then the women who are like, you know, the flight attendants and things like that, they're wearing these like very scant uniforms.
The
where
McDonald's
there's like
women.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's the party plane. Like that's what it is, right? Like it looks like. You remember in Iron Man when all of a sudden all the stewardesses are on the pole, but in the beginning they like pretend like they're not going to be on a pole and they're going to be just flight attendants? It's in the first Iron Man.
Oh my God, I haven't seen that movie.
Oh yeah, so it's a terrible scene and it's meant to be part of why Tony Stark sucks. It's meant to be part of why Tony Stark sucks. But in this movie, all of the women are dressed like the Halloween version of a flight attendant.
Yeah,
patriarchy is alive and well in 2263.
Yes.
Yeah, the way that she's dressed throughout the movie, through the very end, is like she starts nude, she ends nude, and in between there's a series of scantily clad outfits always. And the way she's filmed is always very, I mean, fully male gaze. There's no commentary being made at all.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, let's take a quick break. What do you say?
Sounds good.
All right.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can we talk about Ruby Rhode?
We better.
Queer icon?
Pansexual icon.
Pansexual, yes.
Possibly. I do find it interesting that this feels like they're trying to have it both ways, where they're like, we're going to have a dude who is hypersexual, turns on all the ladies, all of this stuff, but in order to make sure that he is not more sexy or sexual than our lead... we have to give him parts that are effeminate. Mm-hmm. It is like a very 90s way of looking at that. I hear a lot of whims in the audience. This is the thing I've thought about.
Yeah.
As another pansexual icon. Yes. Who can't close your legs. So, yeah, it is interesting because obviously, like, he does have effeminate moments, mm-hmm. But he is also, like, banging down stewardesses in weird ways. Maybe more coercy, not super consensually ways. Which we'll talk about. But it's also, yeah, so they wanted clearly to make this character that's like super sexy. Everyone wants to be with him. But how do we make him not a threat for our hero for the love of our baby woman?
Right. He's also basically doing a podcast, the whole thing. He's like talking into a mic. He's like, yeah. It's my show from
really
5 to 7.
Like where the show is or where it's being broadcast. It's like, this could be anyone in Los Angeles.
It's on iTunes somewhere.
I have a show.
Casper Mattresses.
But
guys, Blue Apron delivered 50 pounds of seafood onto my doorstep the other day.
But yeah,
and
so he.
I don't know why they did.
Yeah, he's got this like entourage of like men who are like all kind of queer coded. He's like,
Come in, my man.
Like, yeah, come in.
And it's also a way to like slide in some black people that weren't, house musicians in the 90s in England, which is what basically all of the other black people are, were either English models or English rappers.
Yeah, it's very European, a lot of this movie. Ruby Road is a tricky character. I feel like it very much falls under the umbrella that we come up with 90s movies all the time, which is like kind of like what you were saying, Danielle. It's like a movie trying to have it both ways. It's like, oh, this is some manner or impression of queer representation, but don't worry, they're still very bad to women. And like, yes, it's some manner of queer representation, but don't worry, technically if you wrote them out of the script, the movie would be no different. They really don't push the story forward in any way. It's sort of queer representation, but also they constantly are needing the straight male white lead to bail them out. And so it just feels like it is a step in some ways, but also, I don't know. It was frustrating. It's like you want that character who is like so funny and so like well played to have more of a narrative impact.
It feels like someone, Luc Besson's black wife, realized that a lot of the black people in the movie don't actually get to be people. And was like, maybe we should make one of the black people a purple and not make them an alien or paint them blue or like do whatever. Like maybe there should be one person that's clearly black in this movie.
And it's like, it's so frustrating because it's so well played. And the
character
is
a very fun character. Yeah.
And it's funny and the fits are incredible. I don't know. I just wish that it's very frustrating to me when movies incorporate any marginalized group in a way that doesn't progress the narrative, because then it just sort of reads as to some extent kind of like gratuitous, as like they were just doing it like, oh, I'll just do this, but it won't actually make a difference.
Yeah, that's what like when the groups of the gates of the people, when they complain about this is just to please the SJWs, it's like, no, because we actually want our characters to mean something. This is because they want to get all 4 or 5 quadrants. This has nothing to do with us. And that's what this was.
Yeah.
Although, again, I mean, I do. It's a great character and I love him. But yeah, he can very easily not at all be in the movie.
I just like
still progress.
If he had even, it would be so easy to write out like he doesn't know how to defend himself in any way. Or like if he had a skill that could forward the group, which would help the story because it would make them seem like more of a group and not just sort of a group of people who are codependent on Bruce Willis, then that would have been great. And it would have been such an easy fix that would have like made the story better. And it's like if you just unpassed out Lilu and gave Ruby Road a skill, the movie's better, so why not do that?
Well, yeah, and Ruby Rod essentially became the damsel during that escape scene.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Colbert, my man. I'm just going to keep doing Ruby Rod. It is iconic. I mean,
he is an icon,
the rose
but
dress.
Yes.
Oh, God gosh. Damn it.
A couple of other things I wanted to mention. Jamie, you already touched on this, but Corbin's mom. So we never meet her on screen.
Mom.
Corbin's mom is the Just Know Mother-in-Law subreddit made into a person. That's a joke for the people who got it.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
There's a subreddit on Reddit, which is just people bitching about their mothers-in-laws, which becomes very clear that it's just people writing fan fiction where they get to call women bitches.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. Love that.
It's pretty tight.
Pretty sick.
So Corbin's mom, we never meet her on screen, but we hear her voice quite a bit because she's always calling Corbin.
Him.
Not nagging.
Mom.
Leaving messages.
Man, women, you go from being a hot baby to being a nagging mom in 2 seconds.
Right. And this is how a lot of moms are portrayed in movies where it's like, sure. I'm going to let that pass. Okay.
We're under arrest.
But this is how a lot of women, or a lot of mothers are portrayed in movies where it's like a nagging, overbearing, like can't let go of her baby boy and like... often played as like comic relief, like someone to not be taken seriously because he's always like brushing her off and it's just like
also like
example.
Commonly known as like bad writing.
Is exactly what that is.
Because there's no in between. Now we're getting to a point where we get competent women, but very often it is like you are either a sexy person, I want a sex who also kicks other people sexily, or you are this nagging, horrible, why should I have to clean my room, Mom?
Yeah.
Why do I have to take my diarrhea medication? Now I'm all right.
Mom.
That's real. You can look that up.
And you never see her.
Right.
We never formally meet her. She's strictly played off screen for laughs with Bruce Willis and then later with the president. She's like, I don't believe you're the president. The president sucks. Cut to Bruce Willis fucking end of movie.
A great last
hilarious.
Few minutes.
Yeah.
Another female character who's introduced who is like kind of played as a joke is her name is Major Iceborg. Another Titanic reference, obviously.
That is the official name of the iceberg that sank the Titanic.
Major Iceborg.
They're like, sir, Major Iceborg.
But she comes in the scene where the general is like, hey, Corbin, we need you to like go on this secret mission, even though you are retired from the military. But do this anyway. So she comes in and basically she would not probably be considered attractive by Western ideal like beauty standards. And then they're like, she's going to play your wife, Corbin, and you won this trip. And he takes one look at her and he's like, I am not going, as if like she's not beautiful traditionally, so therefore she is disgusting, and it's just like played as this
and
whole
not
joke.
Worth being around for 3 fucking seconds.
Right.
Yeah, it's so fraught. Like they're also like per this movie, you don't see women for canonically 3 centuries, and then when you get to women, finally, it's like, oh, it's only actually naked white ladies that we see, and everything else is gross to us. So sorry. And that's just the movie.
Yeah, look, I either want the perfect woman who you made out of a hand.
Perfect.
Or nothing at all. Not right. This incredibly, like, that woman could have had his back. Could have shot some folks up. We don't know how long she'd been in the academy. She had probably been working where she's a major. You know how long it takes to be a fucking major? She had been working to be a major for years. Mm-hmm. And this dude looks at her and goes like, oh, your hips. And is suddenly like, I'm going to do this mission alone. I've been retired forever, but I know I'm better at it than you.
That's part of why I feel like this movie ultimately even though you see it and aesthetically it doesn't look like a very conservative movie, but ultimately I feel like the story does play very conservative because you're given these characters who on the written page seem like it's on the right track of like we've got our female Christ figure and we've got a queer reading character who is present for much of the movie, but ultimately they're both deeply reliant and the plot's deeply reliant on kind of your average white, you know, ex-military blue-collar straight guy and that the Bruce Willis character. And so it seems like such a cop-out for such a high-concept movie that could be doing so much more to ultimately tease you and pull in viewers with like,
hi, this is something you want to see in movies. Like, you want to see women, you want to see queer people, you want to see people of color. But ultimately, it's the same thing, and the movie won't end unless the norm takes place. And right. So it's just like, it's frustrating, because it's, for so much of it, I'm on board. But the way it plays out, you're like, oh, fuck, you had all this stuff. Why didn't you use it?
Yeah, like, it's pretty and weird and French and unorthodox. But then at the end, they're still like, penises and vaginas.
right. The, like, it just, and then a beam of light.
Sure. Oh, my God. Were they the first? Never. They did a reverse sky beam. Never mind. They didn't do the sky beam going down. They did the sky beam coming up.
They did. They beamed
from her mouth, because that's where love comes from.
Mm. You know, the love hole. So frustrating.
Yeah, to the extent where, like, the diva character is like, she needs your help and she needs your love. And it's like, does she?
She's a weapon. She's a nuke. Do I have to make out with this nuke?
Right, like, I guess they're trying to humanize her in that moment, but it's
Bruce
like...
Bruce Willis, we need you to French this bomb. Like, and he's like, I'll do it.
Like, man, you know what humanizing her would do more than having other people tell you that is... make her a person.
Yeah, that's
if you wrote her as a person, because all of those are words on a page and you can change any of those any second.
Right.
And you can tell that whole sequence where like the diva's singing opera and then we cut back to Lilu fighting. You can tell that everyone involved in the movie is like, oh my God, feminism, we get it. It's just like guys are like high-fiving and patting themselves on the back like, OMG, 1997, we did it. And it's like, no, you're hot. You, a woman kicked one time, and within minutes of this sequence ending, one will die and you'll have Bruce Willis punch through her flesh. You didn't do it.
To be fair, she already had a bullet hole and he just reaches into it. But
to be fair, he just
reaches into like, my bullet hole, daddy.
Get the stones, daddy. That's what I always say. I was like, where are the stones?
The stones, they're in me, daddy.
I'm the
And then he's like,
stone.
They're in her. What could that possibly mean?
He's like,
does that mean they're in her? It does.
And also, I think it bears telling that during this moment, which is, I think, one of the only moments where there's cut screens where two women are both doing equal, they're both doing the most impossible thing you've ever seen in the world. And that's the only time they show two women.
And then Bruce Willis is seen punching a woman, which is not even the only time Bruce Willis has done that on screen. So, you know, he just like, he's like, oh, the stones, I got them. And then everyone's like, woo, Bruce.
Sorry about your dead diva.
Yeah. Then RIP diva, Bruce changes into, regretfully, I honestly lost a lot of interest once he took it off the tank top. I really liked it.
Oh, God. Well, is there anything anyone else wants to talk about?
Let's see. Consent.
Did we handle everything?
Ruby Rod. I think.
Yeah, I kept saying Ruby Road. I apologize.
It's fine because I keep doing, like, he keeps doing, like, funny, weird things with his accent to be like, Ruby Rod.
Yeah, I think I heard it that way the first time, and then I was like, okay. Sounds good. But then Ruby Rod, you're like, oh, penis, got it.
Yeah, get it? Because it's dick.
Get it? Because of dick. That was everything I had. It's weird because it's like, ultimately, I, even on first viewing, enjoyed this movie. And it is so like aesthetically fun. And it moves so quickly. And it's on dailymotion.com. I mean, what more could you want in a movie? But there are so many, like, I think it's almost a classic case of like a 90s movie trying to have it every which way, but ultimately playing to the norm.
Yeah, exactly.
Because even in the end, wasn't it Ruby Rod who fucked up opening the stones?
It's
I'll come with my man. I have to start.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't have fire. Yeah.
I have no fire.
He's like, I quit smoking, even though the day before we see him smoking a cigarette. So.
And also, come on, it'd be a vape. Let's be real. What if he'd be vaping off of that mic? That mic is half mic, half vape.
New reboot where we blow vape smoke on the stones.
Coolest stones ever, man.
Yeah.
we touched on this a little bit, but like Corbin spends the whole movie condescending to the woman he's in love with and will like end up with at the end.
The love story makes no fucking sense.
It really, it doesn't need to be there.
She even says like, love, I don't know love. And he's like, I'm going to put my face on you again. And it's like, bitch, that's not love.
He's like, literally just like, remember when I molested you? Let's give it a second shot. And this time it works. Like, it's just horrible.
Because she's so tired, you guys. She's just, this movie has beaten her down.
She's so exhausted. Again, or dying.
Well, because she's had to like bear the like emotional labor of like war. Learning what war is and like being the supreme, fifth element.
He is like her Urkel, where he's like, I'm wearing you down, Lilu.
Right.
I'm wearing you down. But then he does. And that's how the movie ends.
Isn't it where her watching war and being like, reminded me of 50 First Dates when Drew Barrymore has to learn his 2005 every day. And she's like, oh no, Arnold Schwarzenegger's governor? Like, that was kind of what it reminded me of.
But yeah, like, I feel like the thing, he's always like patronizing her and condescending to her based on her. She doesn't have a great grasp of the English language yet, even though she's had a day to learn it and is doing a pretty good job with what she's got.
What she knows and what she doesn't know is very plot convenient.
Right.
She's supposed to know everything, but she doesn't know anything that Bruce Willis can teach her.
Right. But then, like, so when they're, like, trying to check into the Flying Titanic, he's like, yeah, they know what a fucking multi-pass is. And, like, yeah, it's
I
just, like, constantly.
I thought it was a movie pass, and I was like,
But yeah, he's like really mean to her. And then she's like, but let's kiss. So, boo.
Yeah, this movie is weird. That's my last comment. This movie's weird. I don't know. If you still like it, that's fine.
Yeah. Should we take some questions or comments from the audience?
Sure.
Does anyone have anything they want to share? A question, a comment they'd like to share?
Ooh, we got someone. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Come on up.
I just thought it was funny that this is a movie very similar to Blade Runner and also very similar in the sense that straight white men love to try to explain it to you and help you understand why it's so good.
But you don't get it, man. Tears in the Rain. He improv'd that scene.
We had someone else if you're going to come up. What's your name?
My name is Ben.
Hi, Ben.
I'm just going to sit here real quick. So I just remembered that in Valerian, actually, there is another, both in this movie and in Valerian, there's a scene where a woman does a big song number in Valerian, it's Rihanna, and then does something to help out the hero and then immediately dies to advance the plot. Yep. So my question is, does Luc Besson hate female singers?
I think it was another thing where Luc Besson's black wife was like, just something for me. Just Rihanna, or like something. But even in that one, she's like a comfort woman, a woman of the night. Mm. And performing in all of those things is how she attracts people, as though being Rihanna was somehow not enough in space.
It's weird. It's like and I also have the feeling that most of Luc Besson's stories were created when he was 14 years old. And so he writes women as if he is a horny pre-teenager. And that's bad writing.
Oh, God, how gross would it be if he was just like, oh, what's a younger version of my wife to be in this movie?
Oh! But I wouldn't put it past him.
Well, to answer your question, I think that Luc Besson doesn't respect women, period, in general.
Well, and I think he loves a song and dance sequence, and he's like, well, I'm not going to waste a man in this. Put someone in some hot pants.
Yeah.
Make him prance for me.
Yes, that's a great and unfortunate point. Thank you. Do we have any other questions, comments, thoughts?
Anything? Oh, yeah. Come on down.
What's your name?
My name's Katie.
Hi, Katie.
When we were watching this movie, my question was, they find this hand, which doesn't look like her hand, after she's made into a person.
True. Mm.
Do they design her, like the creepy scientists design her to look like that? Or is that like her genetic code?
Actually, this is something I wanted to touch on. I have to imagine they're just reconstructing whatever like genetic material would like dictate her to end up being like. So everyone is using like he pronouns before they realize that she is a woman. Mm-hmm. So it's that
a woman's perfect.
Right. So this to me is a version of that trope where it's like, the person that you thought was a man until they take off their helmet is actually a woman.
But you don't even get the, like, the frustrating but also the one redeeming part of that trope is you get to see that character be capable at something before you find out they're a woman. And this woman does not even, isn't even afforded that. It's like a hand. God. Yeah.
Like when she comes out of the 3D printer, like, she is perfect.
Yeah. Right. And they're like, oh, cool, so she doesn't have any, we don't really care. And it's just, and you see her be literally, like, I feel as if you see her be literally born in this thing that she later fucks Bruce Willis in, because we all aspire to fuck Bruce Willis inside of our moms.
It's like fucking in your childhood bed, which is still also your mom.
Which is, I honestly wish I had. I never did. But, you know, it's fucking weird, yeah, that they it is sort of that thing where they're like, oh, it is perfect that you can hetero fuck, and that's like the lame-o combo,
right? And then even like Father Cornelius is like, he's a she, because everyone was, I guess, expecting the perfect supreme being to be a man, but she's a woman. But that has no impact on the story, except for the fact that then Bruce Willis can later have sex with her.
Right.
Because he's hetero, and because heteronormativity. Are there any other questions or comments?
Gary Oldman's canceled, so we can't comment on him at this time.
Alfred Molina should have.
Alfred Molina would have killed it. Alfred Molina could have played Bruce Willis's part. He'd been thick Bruce Willis. That would have been great.
Thicky Willis.
I would love, well, I don't, not to take parts away from women, but what if the hand turned into Alfred Molina? That would have been kind of fun. And then it would have been a
funny
movie.
Was exactly the same.
He still kisses Bruce Willis at the end. There's still
love. I don't know love.
What if Albert Miller appeared in an incubator and they're like, perfect. I want to see that movie. I want Bruce Willis to be like, 5'9", brown eyes. Albert Miller.
Lulu Dallas multipass.
And then, yeah, I think that actually, not to, like, you know, uncast the only woman in this movie, but I think Albert Miller would be a great Lulu.
Yeah.
What if
Lulu was a gender neutral name?
Exactly. What if Bruce Willis kissed Alfred Molina, and then Alfred Molina did kill Bruce Willis, and he's like, I'm the hero of the movie now. This is the Alfred Molina movie. This is the Molina element.
More like Alpha Molina.
Yeah. So anyways, we just uncast the female lead.
Hey, does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
No.
No, not even a little bit.
No. There's times where women speak to each other, but it's usually the times I spot it was Lulu talking to a woman in a service role who was not named.
Yeah, we don't know her name.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a big fat no on passing the Bechdel test for this movie. Shall we rate the movie on our nipple scale?
Let's do it.
0 to 5 nipples based on its portrayal and representation of women. I'm going to go ahead and give The Fifth Element a half nipple. I mean, between the, like, wild objectification and sexualization of a female character who is crucial to the story in the sense that she is the fifth element and she's like the component they need for the weapon against evil. But aside from that, like, her characterization, it's the whole Born Sexy Yesterday trope. She is there for gratuitous nudity a lot of the time. She has the brain of a baby, essentially, that is very good at learning about war. And
but she hates it.
She hates war.
It's so bad, you guys.
War sucks. War stinks. Guys.
Do you think someone watched that movie and they're like, oh, war's bad? Oh my God.
I'm going to give up on everything now until Bruce Willis puts one on me.
Yeah. And then even like the moments where she's like kicking ass just like feel like a very empty thing. It's where.
Like, ah! And they're like, right. Well, now Bruce Willis will respect her when he fucks her. So dumb.
Yeah, so I think the movie doesn't really handle anything well when it comes to representing women. So yeah, that's a half nipple from me. And I will give it, of course, to Corbin Dallas's cat. So that's that.
Danielle, what's your...
I'm going to give it a full nipple. I'm giving it one full nip, if only because the action scenes were really good and it did help launch Mia Jovovich's career. Because of that, she was able to go on and be an actual good actress in things where she got to kick people in the face. And because it was able to launch that career in other movies, it'll get a full nip.
Cool.
I guess I'll go a half as well. It's just, all the progress this movie is trying to make is kind of self-defeating in a very 1997 way that we see over and over again. And as pleasant as I'm sure it was to see some representation at the time of this coming out, seeing it over 20 years later, it feels even more frustrating to feel like you're trying to have your cake and eat it too, of like, here's queer representation, here's female representation, just kidding, it's Bruce Willis the whole time. And it's just, it's frustrating. I am glad that it was able to give credibility and a platform to actors who wouldn't have had it otherwise, and that's more than a lot of movies of this time did, and that definitely deserves acknowledgement. But like, plot-wise, I would argue you could write out really every character on Bruce Willis's team except for him, and the movie could feasibly play out the exact same way, because even though we're told over and over that Lilu is the chosen one, Bruce Willis is the chosen one according to this movie, because the thing that needs to happen cannot happen without him and without his choices every step of the way. So it's weird that this movie is secretly alt-right, but no, I mean, it just like it hurts to watch, because you see a filmmaker who you can tell thinks they're doing the right thing, but they're not, and so it's frustrating. And so I'll give it a half nipple, and I'm going to give my half nipple to Chris Tucker.
Ooh. Well, Danielle, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for
having me. Give it up for our guest, Danielle Radford.
Thank you.
What would you like to plug? Where can people find you online?
So you guys, every Thursday, I do SJU on Screen Junkies News, and then on Screen Junkies Main, I am the social blah, blah, blah for movie fights. Just find me online. I usually plug all of my weird things. Also, if you like wrestling, I have a wrestling podcast called Tights and Fights. You can also find me on Patreon, where I do a lot of fun things for not a lot of money a month, because, you know, who has it?
Thank you to the Ruby for having us.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you to Aristotle.
Aristotle's back there if you want to meet Aristotle. Here. Give it up for yourselves for being here.
Thanks for coming.
We're back.
That's the episode, baby. Love It or Leave It is the name of a podcast you can listen to right after this.
Yeah, we just wanted to plug a few things to say thank you again to the Ruby for having us.
And to Danielle Radford.
To Danielle Radford, a wonderful, wonderful person. Very funny. Yes. Don't forget that we have a live show in Los Angeles at the Ruby on the second Saturday of every single month.
Mm-hmm. So come out, join the fam. We're starting to get a little crew. Mm-hmm. Comes every month. It's very exciting. And we're also going on tour very soon.
Yes.
Yes. So we will be in San Francisco.
A sold out show. So sorry if you don't have your tickets.
Portland. Also
not sold out yet.
Oh,
at the time of this recording.
Losers.
But it's close. At the time of this recording.
Winners.
It is not yet sold out, but those tickets are going very fast. So perhaps by the time of the episode release, it will be sold out. Hard to say.
You've got to just get on your little computer and figure it out.
Yeah.
And then we have Seattle shows as well.
The two live Bechdelcast shows are sold out.
However, we are doing a stand-up show on the 24th that we highly recommend. You know, you want to see Caitlin and Jamie strike out on their own and do a little something. Maybe we'll do something together. We haven't decided
yet.
Do
I have 3 minutes of Titanic-based puns as jokes? Yes, I do.
Can confirm.
And you know what? By the time, you know, this show rolls around, I may have written 3 more minutes. Hard to say.
I usually end up body slamming a doll. Anything could happen at this wild Seattle show.
Woo woo. Okay. So grab tickets for that, the ones that are still available on BechtelCast.com, and click on the live appearances tab. Oh, we've got a Patreon, a.k.a. a Matreon.
Patreon.com/BechtelCast will get you 2 bonus episodes a month for only $5.
And this month in January, mm-hmm. a.k.a. Pageant January, a.k.a. Pageantuary, we are covering Dumplin'.
It's almost as good as Revenge Burr.
Almost, but not quite. We are covering the Netflix movie Dumplin', mm-hmm. and we are covering Drop Dead Gorgeous, both frequent requests as of late.
Yes. So check it out.
Check out that. Check out our merch store, tpublic.com/TheBechtelCast.
Check us out on Twitter and Instagram, BechtelCast. You can also check out our Facebook if you're still fucking with Facebook.
Which I am not. So if you've sent us a Facebook message and you have not gotten a response, it's probably because I never go on Facebook anymore.
Yeah, I was about to say, I go on Facebook sometimes, but only because I like to make fun of my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, mm-hmm. Zuck is canceled.
Yeah.
Sheryl Sandberg, lean out. You're mean. We don't like you.
Yeah. Also, rate and review us on iTunes.
Oh,
that
yeah.
would be great. That helps us out a lot. And
yeah, a lot of MRAs get into our reviews and it gets messy. So
yes.
We'd appreciate it.
So thanks for listening. Yes, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for all of your support. Mm-hmm. We'll be here next week.
Bye.
Bye.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.